two crazy porks who host this show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatty-dee-bop, shabba-dooey. You'll revel in hilarity. It's pork therapy.
Why not?
Oh, I can think of many reasons.
Well, let's save the reasons for the... Hey, why not? That might be an interesting show topic.
What are we going to talk about with that?
This is Pork Therapy.
Yep, Pork Therapy, and I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Mike. Why not?
Yeah, and welcome to our show.
Thanks for listening.
Yep. And you can hear us, as always, on the Liberty Radio Network on LRN.FM. Check out the great Liberty-oriented content playing 24/7. And you can also go to our website, porctherapy.com, and check out all of our past shows, as well as find ways to contact us and ask us your relationship questions, because what's our show about, Mike?
Relationships from a voluntary perspective.
Yes, exactly. I think we're both people who consider ourselves voluntarious, and we talk about relationships.
Any kind of relationship.
Apply the principles of voluntary interactions to our relationships in
right.
our lives.
Or we try.
We try, yeah. We hope to do it successfully someday. Anyway, so I guess tonight's show is going to be a little different than normal. We typically don't read articles on our show, but every once in a while we get one that's pretty relevant.
Or fun,
and I think this one is both. And I wanted to talk about this article for one. But if you get sick of us reading articles and you want to ask us your listener questions, you can always email us questions@porktherapy.com.
Or you can call us at 419-PT-LOVE-4.
Indeed. And you can also get a hold of us, I believe, at our personal email addresses if you want to ask us something more personal. Mike@porktherapy.com and Stephanie@porktherapy.com right. as well.
And all of that info is on our website, porktherapy.com.
Did we say porktherapy.com?
I think so. Yes. Like 10 times, actually, in the other stuff we talked about.
I was being facetious. Oh.
So, first is a very quick bit of listener feedback.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a change in our website, which we just said a billion times, so I won't say it again. porktherapy.com.
Yeah, the address didn't change, but our server did. We changed to a new host, which is going to hopefully be faster and more responsive and less problems. But in doing so, I had to rebuild the site instead of a simple migration.
Mm-hmm.
So the looks are all different.
Yeah.
And our feedback was, whoa, sexy new Pork Therapy website. Love the new look, guys. So it's like a stock theme that I haven't modified yet because I just needed to get the site up.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, I'm glad someone likes the new look.
We don't even have our logo up yet. Nothing.
Oh, wow. We need to take care of that
yeah.
very quickly.
But I'm glad it does look better than... It looks like it will look better than uh-huh. our other site. Thank you for the comment.
Yes, and we hope it looks better.
Yeah. It should behave the same, and there's all the features there.
Mm-hmm. So, yep, just a little bit of what's going on in our lives. And we've been pretty busy with that, too, so we haven't really been posting episodes on the fast-paced schedule that we usually do, right?
We've been busy with lots of things. We are... humans who have
lives
outside of the show.
We don't just exist to entertain you. You might think that sometimes, but
things have been busy for both of us recently.
Indeed. So what do we have tonight? We're going to talk about this article, right?
The title of the article that we're going to read is Atheists Do It Better: Why Leaving Religion Leads to Better Sex.
Mm-hmm. Two things we love to talk about: sex and religion. There are a lot of really weird ideas in religion, don't you think?
I was going to say it's all weird ideas, but no, there's some, you know, attempts at morality and philosophy and that have derived from the weirdness of a ghost that's three people floating on water and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And, one of the things that I think is the weirdest about religion is the idea that you should somehow feel guilty about sexuality, especially women, because that really is hammered home with women that, you know, the only thing that's valuable about them, according to most mainstream religions, is their virginity and their ability to pop out children, of course. Yes. But, you know, before that, it's your virginity. That's the most, wonderful and valuable thing about you, and you're saving it to give the ultimate gift to your husband, who you will, you know, be with for the rest of your life. And
isn't it ironic that according to that view, that a woman is valuable before she has sex because she hasn't, and after she has sex because she does, because she can have
children. Well, I mean, don't even attempt to put logic on these people. They just they have none. And of course, you know, all kinds of other weird ideas related to sex within mainstream religions. But if we just look at Catholicism real quick, not only is it one of the most guilt-ridden religions, and it's very hateful towards homosexuality, like a lot of the mainstream ones are, but, I mean, they even banned birth control. They're telling people in third world countries that, you know, they shouldn't try to use condoms or control the amount of kids that they have. And that's just so ass backwards in so many different ways. It's someone not only telling a woman that she has no control over how many children she has and over her reproductive health, because it is a choice to have children that does involve risk and it involves the prospect of supporting another human being once the child is born. But, you know, they're also getting in between people's personal lives and their relationships, and they're telling people how to behave with one of the most intimate aspects of their personality, which is their sexuality and their sexual well-being.
Right.
So I just think that's completely egregious. And it's one of the most offensive, I think, forms of authoritarianism that there is. When someone tries to control someone else's most intimate thoughts, desires, feelings, wants, that kind of thing. It's just some completely on its head. So should we get into this article before I start ranting more? I know you want to start it.
Okay. Well, you want to start reading?
Sure.
All right.
And you know what? I think what we'll do with this is we're going to read an abridged version of this article and cut out the repetitive parts when I do my editing. And thank you, Greta Christina, for letting us read your art. Not for, she didn't let us.
For publishing it.
Thank you, Greta Christina, for putting an article on the internet that we could read and comment on.
Yes.
And of course, the article is from alternet.org. And it's,
we'll link to it.
Okay, so atheists do it better. Why leaving religion leads to better sex. So the article starts out, do atheists have better sex? Yes, according to science, that is, and more specifically, according to the recently released Sex and Secularism study. Now, Mike, feel free to jump in with your thoughts during this article.
It's a little bit long, but
yeah, we'll punctuate it with our opinions,
wow.
As usual. Okay, so the article goes on. In January 2011, organizational psychologist Daryl Ray, ED, psychologist for 30 years and author of The God Virus, as well as two books on psychology, and Amanda Brown, undergraduate at Kansas University, focused on sexuality and sex therapy, conducted a sex survey of over 14,500 people, atheists, agnostics, and other people in the secular community. The study was looking at religion, atheism, and sex, how religion affects sex, how leaving religion affects sex, whether lifelong atheists feel differently about sex than people who have recently deconverted, and so on.
Deconverted. That's an interesting word.
Now, actually, we should go back to something, because something caught my eye when I was reading this.
Uh-huh.
It said they conducted a survey of 14,500 people, so nearly 15,000 people.
Right.
And then it says the people were atheists, agnostics, and other people in the secular community. What about the religious people? Doesn't that seem like an important control?
Yeah, I was thinking about that when it said, what is the secular community? Secular means non-religious, so
I suppose it's people who are enthusiastic. It's like the Liberty community. It's people who are excited and enthusiastic and thoughtful about being atheists or non-religious, I suppose. That's what I take it to mean.
I hope that, in fact, this study will be completely meaningless if they didn't also talk to
religious people,
right? So I hope that they mention that later, but you're right, that sentence makes it sound incredibly lopsided.
Oh, yeah. Pseudoscience.
Yeah.
It's called a control group, people. Anyway, we won't judge until we read the rest of this, but maybe it'll tell us more about it.
I bet they did talk to religious people, and that's worded wrong.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I'm sure this is someone just giving a summary of someone else's study, so they usually get the details wrong. But, okay, so it says, The report, Sex and Secularism, What Happens When You Leave Religion, is on the internet, and if you want all 46 pages of the naughty details, including charts and graphs and personal stories, you can download it free. You just need to register on the site. So maybe we should download it and take a look at the methodology. But then the article goes on, but if you just want to know the gist, leaving religion improves people's sex lives. A lot.
And again, I wonder how accurate that wording is. Is it leaving religion that improves the sex life, or is it not having religion?
Or maybe their sex life improved and it caused them to leave religion.
Oh,
or,
interesting. Yeah, the causality thing.
Or maybe they've just been doing some more introspection and it improved their sex life and made them an atheist independently.
Right, I mean, right. They could not be linked.
I'm sure this... I mean, it's actually interesting and important to point out the biases that are in a lot of these mainstream articles that summarize research studies, because number one, like, you can look critically at the study and find that maybe there are a number of flaws in the study, but when somebody else summarizes a study that's already flawed,
then it biases it even more.
Usually leaps to crazy conclusions that can't really be interpreted from the data that was in the study. So anyway, scientists rant over, that was my pet peeve. Okay, so the article goes on.
If only there was someone in the news and the media community who knew science well and could write about it. If only.
I might be that person. I hope I'm that person.
All right.
Anyway, so it says, atheists and other non-believers as a whole experience a lot more satisfaction in their sex lives than they did when they were believers. They feel much less guilt about their sex lives and their sexuality. The sexual guilt instilled by so many religions tends to fade, and indeed disappear, when people leave religion much more thoroughly than you might expect. And according to the respondents of this study, non-believers give significantly better sex education to their kids than believers do.
Well, that makes complete sense. Look what believers are told.
Yeah,
by
that
their
you
faith,
shouldn't
that
you talk
can't
about
talk
sex.
About it, and it's evil. It's a sin
it's
to talk
dirty,
and mention
it's
about
bad.
It. Yeah.
It's secret to be pushed into
That's
the
right.
closet.
And so the kids learn from watching porn or watching dogs in the street or talking amongst their friends who are making stuff
Is that
up
how
to
you
show
learn
off.
About it?
Dogs, not goats.
Oh, goats, gotcha.
And
I grew up on a farm.
Alpacas. I learned by watching the alpacas.
I see. No, you're completely right. I mean, religious people tend to view sex, I think, as just from my own anecdotal experience, as something that's dirty, that, you know, it taints you if you even talk about it, or it's definitely not something to be joked about, right? If you joke about it, then you're just uncouth, you're crass, you're,
right.
You know, it's not appropriate, you know, it's off color. So, I don't know, I just think that when you let go of those things, when you pull that giant stick out of your butt about those kinds of things, it really does you a lot of good. Because sex is a natural part of life. It's just...
Sex is an essential part of life.
It is, because without it,
you
wouldn't exist.
You could live without having sex your whole life, but then no one else would in your chain. And if everyone on Earth suddenly stopped having sex because God said so, then suddenly everyone on Earth is dead.
Isn't there a religion called the Shakers?
Yes.
It was against their beliefs to have sex, and then they all basically just died out?
Well, they would die out in one generation because they don't believe in procreating. I don't know about sex, but
unless they had a little oopsie. Accident.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not like any priests have ever had sex and they told them not to. But with Shakers,
well, that's why they have sex.
It's part of the belief, I believe, to actually adopt, to like, in my opinion, in a brainwashy way. Like, we're kind of like the monks do.
Yeah.
We're going to take your child into our religion and raise them, you know, good and all.
Yikes.
It's good for the child, but then poof, they've got someone in their religion for the next generation without having to procreate.
Right, right. I wonder how they came to that conclusion. Just doesn't seem like a long-term marketing strategy that's any good for
them.
Yeah,
it sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Not to mention just their everyday life. Like in their houses, in a Shaker's house, they have the inside is separated and they have an exterior door for women and one for men.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just horrible. It sounds horrible.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know. If we had an exterior door for women and an interior one for men on Pork Therapy... Or wait, if we had what,
two doors,
if we had two separate doors for us on Pork Therapy, we would never be able to do the show together.
Right. We'd have to like yell through the wall
or one of us would have to switch genders or something, right. Or who knows?
It would make for a great sitcom, but
I'm not into that world.
Yeah. You already said I look good in a Christian skirt, school
you
skirt.
Sure do, yeah. Mike. I've seen you before. But anyway, the point that I was trying to make was that, you know, sex is a natural part of life, and it's playful, it's happy, it's fun. You know, I think people forget that a lot. It's not like I'm sure it can be an intensely passionate and serious thing.
And it can be a chore, and it can be hurtful. And
sure.
A tool of leverage, it could be.
But you would hope that it's not that way. No. And I think the natural way that humans are and would be if they were free from a lot of these cultural and religious influences is just very joyous about sex and just treating it as what it is, which is just an expression of happiness and love and intimacy, you know, and maybe a way to make babies.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, but not always.
And also, a way to make babies? I guess.
The way to make babies? You're right, Mike. Thanks for correcting me on that.
Well, science actually
proved me wrong. Well, I thought babies came from the stork.
Right, it is a way.
They got dumped out of the sky. Anyway, okay, so the article goes on. Now, when it comes to people's actual sexual behavior, religion doesn't have nearly as much impact as you might think. Religious and non-religious people have pretty much the same kinds of sex at pretty much the same age of onset and pretty much the same rate. What do you think about that, Mike?
Well, for one, it implies that they did indeed survey religious people.
Yes, so, that's right.
Okay,
okay, so that answers our question.
For two, I guess I could believe it. Sure, why not?
Yeah, I think
I think a lot of people iffy.
Are told you don't do things like masturbate or don't do things like have sex before you get married or whatever. But I think that there are very few people who actually follow through on that.
And it's possible that these surveys were you know given in a very anonymous fashion. Mm-hmm. These answers are possibly very forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Okay, so then it goes on. Believers are just as likely to masturbate, watch porn, have oral sex, have sex outside marriage, and so on, as non-believers are, and they started at about the same ages. So it's not like religious sexual guilt is actually making people abstain from forbidden sexual activity. All it's doing is making people feel crummy about it. And when people leave religion, this crumminess decreases at a dramatic rate.
So if this is a modern study, and I think it is very, very current, that would have some effect. Because if they surveyed 15,000 people 30 years ago, then religious people might not proclaim to have the same sexual activity that non do, or maybe they even wouldn't. So I think our times, in my opinion, religion is simply dying. It's going to take many generations.
Thrashing around and dying a slow death.
Very slow, but you can tell it's more dead now than it was 30 or 50 or 100 years ago.
Absolutely.
So that could have some effect.
Yeah, and I hope statism follows the same path.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think it is, but more slowly.
Yeah.
I mean, well, basically, statism, it's just the next religion.
Exactly what I was just going to say. Oh. That's why we do the show together. We just think alike, Mike. But for our listeners who might not have been thinking the same thing, yeah. I mean, statism and religion are extremely similar.
If you think, or if a person thinks that government is good, then they're not thinking about it, just like religion, right?
Yeah.
If they think that it helps and doesn't
hurt, critically, anyway.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Just like religion. Mm-hmm. They just hear something and accept it. In fact, just like religion, they hear it. You know, in religion, you grow up to be your parents' religion because that's what they want you to be and that's what they teach you.
Right.
In government, you grow up thinking your government's the best and government is necessary and good because that's government always teaches you.
Yeah.
Government runs education.
Yeah.
So it's just another religion.
Yeah, I agree. Well said. So do you agree, Mike, that it might be possible that atheists or people who are not religious and religious people are doing the same sex acts, but the religious people are just basically feeling guilty about it, even though they're still doing it?
Huh. In general, that's very hard to believe, actually. I would think that some religious people do the same things that the same sexual acts that a lot of non-religious people do. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about the extremes when people, you know, have a strap on and they'd have an acrobat swing in their basement and whatever. The extremes. Yeah, there's probably some religious people that do that.
Mm-hmm.
But even if we just talk about regular, whatever that is, sex.
Yeah.
I bet that there is a lot of guilt in most religions, not just Catholicism, but I bet a lot of them, not innate, what's the word? Subconscious?
Mm-hmm.
Just, even for people who call themselves religious but go to church once or twice a year, if they sit down in prayer, if they go to a confession, I bet it's in the back of their mind that they had this wild kinky sex last week and they're not going to mention it.
Yeah, exactly. And wouldn't you think that it's probably really difficult? Like, okay, I have met some religious people even couples who have said stuff like, well, you know, they seem really socially conservative and really religious, but, you know, they make jokes and about their husband and how sexy he is and how they love to, you know, do stuff with him. And they act as if, you know, it's okay because we're married or whatever, right? Wouldn't you think, though, that it's pretty hard to go from all your life feeling guilty about sex, masturbation, anything sexual, and then all of a sudden, once you get married, once you have that wedding day and the church sanctions it or the state sanctions it or whatever, then all of a sudden something poof magically changes and your relationships are completely different. Your view of sex is completely different.
And I think the key word is magic.
Yeah. That's what religion because it's is. It's not real. It just seems like that's very difficult for me to understand how someone could go through an instantaneous change like that and suddenly stop feeling all guilt about sex because because they're married.
That's true. Yeah. You know, this, I don't know what it was that kicked me off on a thought, but there could be an entire demographic that makes this hard to believe or that makes this easy to believe. And that is homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess bis as well, bisexuals as well, because
anyone who's not straight.
Right. I don't know any religion that says this is good. It's a good, you'll get into our heaven or whatever they have for heaven if you're bisexual or gay. I don't know any religion that says that it's good to be gay. And yet, everyone who's gay and in the closet, they must be feeling immense guilt if they're also religious.
Sure.
Or if everyone who's gay and not in the closet, who's openly gay and religious, they're probably feeling guilt all the time. Mm-hmm. Every time they go to church, they might also feel anger and frustration and whatever else, but I bet there's a lot of guilt all the time. I bet there's a lot of negative feelings that affect their sex because they're openly gay, which is healthy, and they're religious.
What about just their whole identity?
Yeah.
Like, they're constantly being told that there's something wrong with them or that it's against nature or whatever. These natural feelings that they feel just to be attracted to the people who they find attractive is like criminalized by the church.
And for that matter, what about all the people who are gay, but because of religious guilt or whatever reason, are in the closet and they're going to have their sex. They're going to have sex.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're going to go to the restroom in the airport or the what?
The glory hole.
The glory hole in the bathroom. Or if you're a priest, they're going to have sex with little boys. You know, whatever the case is, they're going to be feeling even more guilty.
Right.
By the way, I don't condone that.
But. Oh, no. I mean, we, of course not. And that's the whole point of what we're saying. Yeah. It's that when you prohibit something, whether it's government prohibiting alcohol in the 1920s, or it's government prohibiting marijuana nowadays, or it's religion prohibiting gay sex when people want to have gay sex, it's going to happen anyway. It's just going to go underground, and it's just going to become more dangerous.
Right. Like even modern-day the Catholic Church prohibiting condom use.
Absolutely.
It's harder to get condoms, and when people get them, they don't know how to use them.
Yeah. And then they end up getting HIV and having unplanned pregnancies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just not good. I think this is a general principle that applies to many, many things in life. Even if you want to prohibit, like, let's say your romantic partner from doing something you don't want them to do. Let's say you want to prohibit your partner from working at night instead of spending time with you. I don't think that works.
Prohibition?
Yeah. No. I mean, I don't think prohibiting
anything
works.
Not for another person. You might be able to set up some kind of prohibitive goals for yourself.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. But for any other person, I think you're right. It's essentially force.
Yes.
You can convince, maybe.
Yeah. You can
negotiate.
You can persuade.
Right.
You can make yourself
educate.
You can educate, right? You can make yourself a sort of a beacon. This is like the approach that I favor. Actually, is like, let's say you wanted your partner to spend more time with you at night rather than working. Just as the example that I used before. Well, I mean, there are ways that you can do that by making yourself someone that they feel comfortable opening up to and talking to so that they want to meet your needs voluntarily because you're meeting theirs. Instead of trying to force them, hey, spend time with me or else I'll do this. I'll hit you. I'll ignore you. I'll not have sex with you or whatever.
I'm leaving.
Right. Yeah. If you don't start paying attention to me, there's going to be trouble or whatever. Instead of doing that, I mean, I think that's a really, not that enlightened approach to attempting to modify someone else's behavior, right?
Right. And wouldn't you say that modify someone else's behavior is not a very nonviolent communication way of talking?
Well, yes, but that's what they're trying to do. Right. I mean, if someone...
That's what they're trying to do, but if someone, that's not what anyone should be trying to do, right?
No,
they should be trying to get a win-win.
Especially if it's someone you love, you should be giving them the freedom to do the things that make them happy and meet their needs while also meeting yours. And Okay, so I guess we get back into this article. Okay, before anyone squawks, I'll start the squawking myself. There are some demographic problems with the study, and it shouldn't be relied on as the absolute final word on this topic. In particular, the participants in the study aren't statistically representative of the population. They're statistically representative of whoever heard about it on the internet.
That's it.
And they're disproportionately represented by readers of the hugely popular atheist blog...
Pharyngula. Yeah, so that's a good point.
Okay, so basically they recruited people on this atheist blog to be in their study. You know, I think whenever someone does a research study and asks the participants about their own habits or whatever, or takes a survey, it's biased by what the person self-reports.
Sure.
So sometimes people are embarrassed to admit certain things about themselves.
Or sometimes they think the researcher's looking for a certain thing, and they'll either say it or say the opposite.
Yep. Exactly. So there are multiple problems with self-reports, and of course, as they acknowledge, the sample size was, or the sample was not demographically representative, but nevertheless, this is the result. So then it goes on. But that being said, the results of this report that aren't new, they're entirely consistent with the results of other research. As researcher Daryl Ray told me, our data is virtually identical to other national surveys on the basics of when and how people start sexual behavior. Citations of those studies are in the report.
Wait a minute, I got a comment. So, scientifically speaking, isn't this study worthless? It's not a valid study by itself, and it produces
it's not novel.
and it produces the same data as lots of other studies. So, is it useless? Is it like practice for when they do a real study or something?
Well, I guess the novelty might lie in the methodology. Well, first of all, it was more current, so maybe
it is very current.
Maybe there hasn't been a study like this done in several years, and so that makes it a little bit more novel that it's recent. And maybe there haven't been studies of this kind that have been done on the internet, or maybe the size is larger than other studies. Who knows? It's probably stuff like that. But I think you're right, Mike, to call the novelty into question. And I'm curious where this has been published, if at all, or if it's been published in a peer-reviewed journal.
Right.
I mean, not that that's the gold standard of excellent science, but at least it's a little bit of a check on someone else's work.
Right. Just because software is open source doesn't mean it's good, but it's got a better chance of being good.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
In two sentences, they mention what you just did about the population, so keep reading.
Oh. Well, aren't I smart? Okay, so it goes on. Yes, it's virtually impossible to get completely accurate, statistically representative information about human sexuality under any circumstances. There's not really any ethical way to get information about sex other than relying on people's self-reporting, and it's a topic that people tend to, you know, lie about. True.
Yeah.
But on the reliability scale of human...
10 inches.
But on the reliability scale of human sex research, this report seems to rank on the higher end. You might also argue, as I did myself when I first saw this research, that atheists are pretty often hostile to religion. That atheists are often pretty hostile to religion and aren't going to give a fair assessment of their sex lives when they were religious.
Interesting, because I am hostile to religion and I'm trying to give everyone a fair assessment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're not mutually exclusive, but I guess generally maybe that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm hostile to religion, but I also have to say that personally, I think I managed to escape most of the sexual hang-ups of religion. I mean, I still got some of the ones from culture, but which stem from religion, but but I think I didn't get the gay stuff. Like, I was raised pretty...
By three dads.
Pretty soft-core Jewish.
Yeah. Oh.
And, I mean, it was bad. Like, there was a lot of trauma. Like, my rabbi used to stand over me with a stopwatch and time me reading Hebrew and yell at me if I didn't do it fast enough. And all kinds of things of that nature. And they'd tell me I was selfish if I didn't want to say the prayer before I ate and all kinds of
selfish.
Crap like that. Yeah.
Like that's a bad thing, but...
But at least they never really said anything about gay people. They never really said much about sex at all. Mm. So I'm grateful that I escaped that, at least. Anyway... Yeah, I didn't get beaten as badly as the other slaves, so I'm happy. So the article goes on. The question of whether atheists are often hostile to religion and aren't going to give a fair assessment of their sex lives when they were religious, the article says, I think this is a
A phallic question.
Freudian slip. I think this is a valid question and one that's worth investigating. In fact, I sincerely hope this report is the beginning of research into this topic instead of the end of it, and I'd be very interested to see studies of people who are currently religious and how they see their sex lives. Yeah, I'd be especially interested to compare the sex and secularism results to people who have converted from one religion to another and whether they view their sex lives differently with the new religion. That would be interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
But maybe missing a point a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess she's just pointing out that it's not a perfect study. She just wants more research done.
Yeah, but to compare one religion to another in terms of how bad they are for sexuality.
Right, missing the point, meaning like, well, this religion isn't as bad, so everyone join this religion? No.
It seems like a minarchism of sex and science. I don't know. It seems not root-striking, let me put it that way. Because the root is that all religions, by their nature, have sexual hostility and hang-ups ingrained in
them. Or some kind of hostility and hang-up. If it's probably they all have sexual, but they also have it. Yeah, they also have guilt because you're not as good as God, or not as good as those in the next life, or not as good as those in the next caste, or whatever. All religions say, you're crap, you know, be better in order to have a better life, a better afterlife.
Right. And they're based on, the morality of religion is based on guilt. It's like, do this because God is like your parent, and what your parent does punish you and reward you. And if you do good things, you'll be rewarded. And if you do bad things, you'll be punished. And do what I say, not as I do. And
actually, religion is a big because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the Bible, so do it.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Or, I interpret this is what the Bible says, so God said so, so do it.
And I'm an authority figure, i.e. a priest, so do what I said so. Yeah. Or do what I said, not do what I said so. Anyway. Okay, so then it goes on. But I'd also point out that the atheists who responded to the study didn't give homogeneous answers, not by a long shot. Their responses varied a fair amount, depending on which religion they used to belong to and how intensely religious their upbringing was. And I think that points to something important. I think most of the damage is done in childhood. Before you become a sexual person, really, before you, I mean,
you've got views on sex before you even have sex.
Right.
And I mean, you've got views instilled on you.
Or you're starting to feel puberty or whatever, feel the natural hormones of you becoming an adult. While you're experiencing those changes with your own body and the changes maybe in your mind and feeling attracted to people, I guess, in the way that young people do as they're going through puberty, you're getting these messages, you're getting bombarded by these messages from church and adults and other authority figures saying, sex is bad, don't talk about it, definitely don't do it, don't ask questions about it, all these questions you have, forget about them, shove them down into the into the recesses of your mind, and you should also feel guilty for even thinking about them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here, prepubescent daughter, take this ring and promise that you won't have sex for the next 10 or 15 years until you get married. And if you break that promise, you're just a horrible person.
Yeah, and then you're like, you belong to your dad or some crazy ridiculous crap like that. Yeah, that's so sick. You're pledging your virginity to your dad. That's just the weirdest thing ever. Anyway, I know, and people have these parties where the daughter will pledge to... Notice they never have those for boys, just girls. Huh. Yeah, because, you know, they think for girls, that's the most valuable thing about them, their virginity. But anyway, rant again.
Rant.
Okay. So the atheists basically the article says the atheists who responded to the study didn't give universally consistent answers, which isn't surprising because people are individuals.
Yes.
And then it says their responses ranged from ZOMG, my sex life totally sucked and now it's beyond awesome. I was blind, but now I see, to meh, it's a little better, but it's really not all that different. So the idea that this report simply reflects a knee-jerk atheist hostility to religion, it's worth considering, but it's probably not what's going on here. If there's one take-home message from the Sex and Secularism Report, it's this. Atheists F better.
And she spells it out.
Or rather, atheists have a better time effing. These differences do vary based on the religion. According to the Sex and Secularism Report, some religions have a harsher impact on people's sex lives than others. People raised as Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses, for instance, ranked much higher on the sexual guilt scale than people raised as, say, Buddhists. That's going in the best of episode. That's going in.
Buddhists.
Wow.
Another Freudian.
I
want to
be a Buddhist. Okay. Anyway, let's try that again. People raised as Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses, for instance, ranked much higher on the sexual guilt scale than people raised as, say, Buddhists and Episcopalians. And no, we shouldn't just assume that Catholicism is the guiltiest party. In fact, when it comes to which religions make their practitioners feel guiltiest about sex, Catholicism lands pretty much smack in the middle. The top of the list is Mormonism, Jehovah's Witness, Pentecostal, Seventh-day Adventist, and Baptist, one of many results from this report that run counter to conventional wisdom. I mean, the article is right. I have always thought of Catholics as one of the guiltiest religions about sex.
And according to this, it's in the middle.
Yeah, and I think it might be just because it's more popular than those other religions. The ranking was the guiltiest was Mormons, and then the second guiltiest was Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yep.
And there just aren't as many Jehovah's Witnesses as there are Catholics. You know what I mean?
Jehovah's. No. I mean, I realize there's fewer, but how does that affect whether? How does that affect the results of the survey?
Well, it's the popular perceptions. Like I've perceived. I was not raised Catholic, and I've perceived that Catholicism is a very guilty religion because there's so many jokes about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know what? What's interesting? I don't think this article has yet once mentioned Judaism.
I don't think it has either.
And I know it's a stereotypical joke to say Jewish mothers, you know, instill a lot of guilt,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily sexual,
mm-hmm.
but I just find that totally interesting. It hasn't even been mentioned as an example yet.
Oh, well, I think it's actually coming up. I see that word.
Okay,
right
never
now.
Mind.
We'll get to it, Mike. We're so good at making predictions. Okay, so it goes on. And a similar pattern shows up again and again throughout the report. Conservative religions have a much more harmful effect on people's sex lives than more moderate or progressive ones in terms of guilt, sexual education and information, the ability to experience pleasure, the ability to accept one's sexual identity, and more.
Mm.
Yeah, and all of those things are things that we've touched on, no pun intended, before in this episode. Okay, but with only two exceptions, Unitarianism and Judaism, atheists experience less sexual guilt than religious believers of any denomination.
Wow. So they're actually saying that Jews...
are on par with atheism.
No, they're saying they're less.
Oh.
They experience less guilt. With two exceptions, atheists experience less sexual guilt, which means Judaism is an exception, which means Jews experience less sexual guilt.
Interesting.
Fascinating. And Unitarianism, is that kind of a New Age non-religion religion, or is it like an every religion religion?
I think it's an every religion non-religion.
Yeah.
Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being no sexual guilt and 10 being extreme sexual guilt, atheists and agnostics ranked at 4.71 and 4.81, respectively, and except for Unitarianism and Judaism, which ranks slightly lower, 4.14 and 4.48, respectively, all other religions ranked higher in sexual guilt, from 5.88 for Lutherans to 6.34 for Catholics, all the way up to a whopping 8.19 for Mormons.
Wow.
Holy crap.
Your listeners might have heard a slapping sound in the middle of that paragraph. That was me hitting
face
my forehead.
Palm.
Yeah, because the lowest score...
For sexual guilt.
For sexual guilt
was a 4.1.
4.1,
yeah.
That's 4.7. So 4 out of 10, which is like 40% guilt.
Yeah.
That's what?
That's awful.
I don't know if I probably have felt guilt at having sex, but I can't think of a single time in my life that I've felt guilty about sex.
Yeah, you know what? We should try to go dig into the study and see some of the questions that they ask people, because I wonder what the methodology was.
Yeah.
Was it like, have you ever felt bad after having sex, or
right.
have you ever masturbated and felt guilty about it, or I wonder what they're asking people.
Yeah. Wow. Or maybe the questions are just so vague that just about anything can be considered guilt.
Maybe. Yeah, I was wondering about that. You know, because certainly there have been times, I think, in everybody's life where maybe they've chosen a partner that they weren't that proud of, or they feel like they've made a bad decision in some kind of sexual thing that they did. But I don't know. How much guilt does that equate to on their scale?
Right.
I mean,
right.
I know it's tempting to put a number on it, and especially I think the utility comes in the relative scores for different religions, because you can compare them to each other.
Yeah.
But what is a 0 on that scale, and what is a 10?
Right.
A 10 is someone who's killing themselves because they're so guilty about everything that they possibly do. Every time they get a boner, they just want to die. And 0...
Wow.
And 0 is what?
Someone like us.
Who doesn't care at all.
No, see, that would be the extreme, but we obviously care, we just don't feel guilty.
Yes, no, that's absolutely a good point to mention, because we do care. I mean, not being guilty about sex does not, I repeat, does not equate to being irresponsible, dangerous, completely carefree.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one can be responsible about sex and all of its consequences for sure without feeling guilt. And that's what I think of when I hear the word like sex positive, or, you know, the way that I consider the ideal way to view sex is, of course, realizing and aware of what the consequences can be, but also not guilty about the act of expressing love physically itself.
Right.
Yeah. And sexual guilt doesn't just go up with more conservative religions. It goes up with more religiosity, period. The more religious your upbringing is, the worse your sexual guilt is likely to be. Of people raised in very religious homes, 22.5% said they were shamed or ridiculed for masturbating, to give just one example, compared to only 5.5% of people brought up in the least religious homes. Wow, so that's a huge difference.
It is. And I wonder what the percentage of people ridiculed for masturbating in atheist homes was.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder too. And of people raised in very religious homes, 79.9% feel guilty about a specific sexual activity or desire, while among people raised in the least religious and most secular homes, that number drops to 26.3%. That's a huge, huge difference. And yeah, wow.
So, is a secular home an atheist home?
Maybe not atheist,
okay.
But at least not religious,
okay.
I would assume.
So they're saying, in very religious homes, 80% feel guilty about a desire or a sex act. Whereas in the least religious home, only 26%.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
I mean, 4 out of 5 kids, whatever, raised in a religious home feel guilty about something sexual. Whereas 1 out of 4
right.
feels guilty in a home that wasn't religious.
Yeah.
So
which isn't heaven, but
it's
a big difference.
Yeah. Okay, so it goes on. But one of the most surprising conclusions of this research, sexual guilt from religion doesn't wreck people's sex lives forever. According to conventional wisdom, and I will freely admit that I held this conventional wisdom myself, the author says, religious guilt about sex continues to torment people long after the religion itself has lost its hold. But according to sex and secularism, that's really rarely the case. Once people let go of religion, people's positive experiences of sex and their relative lack of guilt happen at about the same rate as people who were never religious in the first place.
See, that seems obvious to me, too. I guess I don't hold the conventional wisdom. It seems to me that if you don't like religion enough to actually think about it and then change, then the things about that religion that you don't like, you're going to change. You know, if you don't like religion for whatever reason, then when you say, I'm done with this, I just don't believe it anymore, I'm going to believe something else or nothing, then you're also going to say, you know what, I used to be told it's bad to masturbate, but I don't believe that anymore, so it can't be bad to masturbate, so I'm going to try it, or have sex with the same gender or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that's obvious to me, but I guess that's not the conventional wisdom.
Yeah. Ray was surprised by this result as well, and Ray is one of the authors on this study, I guess. So he says, We did think that religion would have residual effects in people after they left, he told me, but our data did not show this. That was a very pleasant surprise. That is not to say that some people don't continue to experience problems, but the vast majority seem to shake it off and get on with their sexual lives pretty well. So letting go of religion means a rebound to a sex life that's as satisfying and as guilt-free as a sex life that was never touched by religion in the first place.
Yay.
Well, that's interesting. I think that relates to liberty, because basically, what this is saying to me is that their results have said people realized, hey, this whole God myth is BS. It's not true. It doesn't make sense. It's not rational. It's not logical. It doesn't follow from reality. And once they let go of that, it was like, okay, God says it's bad to have sex and masturbate and think dirty thoughts or whatever. Not dirty.
God thinks these thoughts are dirty.
God thinks these thoughts are dirty, right. So if God doesn't exist, and if I reject the notion of God, or I reject the notion of the priest who told me that these thoughts are dirty, then I don't have to think that these things are dirty anymore. I don't have to feel guilty about sex. So that's encouraging to me, because once people, as we've said many times in the past, we compare religion to the state, right? So if people realize that government is a fiction, it's basically men and women just like you and me, claiming to have the legitimate use and authority
of force,
a monopoly on the use of force. Once people reject that notion, then they probably can get over the abuse that was done to them and start living as free people instead of as slaves, right?
Sure. Makes sense to me. I mean, literally, it makes sense. I wouldn't have thought the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if someone can actually reject an idea, then it seems to me that all of its, you know, subsequent ideas are also rejected. This
right.
just seems to make sense to me.
Yep, it does.
Okay.
Especially if you have logic and critical thinking skills. Yeah. Now, some hardcore religious believers might argue that this isn't a good thing. People should feel sexual guilt, they argue. These kinds of sex are bad, okay? God doesn't like them. People should feel guilty about them. But it's worth...
That's like... Isn't that tautologous? What's the word?
A tautology?
Isn't that a tautology? They're saying this people who experience guilt say they should experience guilt.
Yeah.
Maybe she makes a point. Keep reading.
Well, this is the slave-on-slave mentality.
Yeah.
The people who are experiencing that guilt themselves, they want everybody else to be miserable
yeah.
with them.
Yeah.
And if we say this in a little bit more compassionate way, they're desperate for someone to empathize with them for the abuse that was done to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to do that abuse to other people
mm-hmm.
because they're desperately trying to get their need for empathy met. So, okay, so she goes on. But it's worth pointing out two things. First of all, the activities being studied in this research are, from any rational perspective, morally neutral. This report isn't looking at rape or non-consensual voyeurism or groping people on the subway. It's looking at masturbation, oral sex, non-marital sex, homosexuality, etc.
Voluntary activities.
Mm, okay. Right. Between people who can consent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sex acts and sexualities that are consensual, egalitarian, reasonably safe, and harmless to society.
Wait, I'm going to interrupt again. Non-marital sex is voluntary for the two people having sex, not for the third.
Yeah, I think okay. they mean premarital sex.
No, they mean non-marital. They said it in here. But when I said these are voluntary activities, mm-hmm. I meant the people engaging in sex, it's voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rape. There's no force going on.
Right.
There, in the case of non-marital sex...
There might be a violation of a marriage contract.
Exactly. There might be a violation of agreement, in which case yes. that part wasn't voluntary.
Right.
So I'm just okay. correcting myself.
Right. I wasn't okay. thinking of it that way.
Okay.
Good point. And then they say that these acts are harmless to society. How could a sex act be harmless to society?
Or harmful.
Or harmful to society. I mean, it may be harmful or harmless or essentially harmless to the individual who does it. But
maybe.
It just seems really collectivistic.
Yeah, it's a horrible thing to say.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to say that certain sex acts could be harmful to society, whatever that means.
Then so could certain diets.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to eat certain foods because that could be harmful to society.
Yeah, exactly. Eating too many donuts is harmful to society. It's flawed thinking.
For that matter, believing in magical fairies that live after you're dead and raised from the grave, that is harmful to society.
Yeah. Okay, so then they go on. The taboos against them are just that, taboos. If there were ever any solid practical or moral reasons behind them, they're buried in the mists of history, and different religions have entirely different sets of these sexual taboos. Some religions denounce some sex acts and accept others, while other religions accept column A and denounce column B, without any apparent rhyme or reason. If God had a message for us about who and how he wants us to boff, he's not being very clear about it.
What? Something God said isn't clear? It's up for interpretation? People interpret it in opposing ways? That is, how did they come up with that conclusion?
There's no way that could be true. And maybe more to the point, according to the report, religion has essentially no effect on people's actual sexual behavior. Atheists and believers engage in the same practices at basically the same age, starting at essentially... Oh,
same
at basically the same rate, starting at essentially the same age. We're all doing pretty much the same stuff. Believers just feel worse about it.
She's
repeating herself
now.
As she said a million times before.
Holy moly.
As Ray told me, our data shows that people feel very guilty about their sexual behavior when they're religious, but that does not stop them. It just makes them feel bad. Of course, they have to return to their religion to get forgiveness. It's like the church gives you the disease, then offers you a fake cure.
Again.
Makes me think of government.
Government.
Yes. The first thing I thought of was... marijuana prohibition.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop anyone from smoking pot.
Nope, it just...
But a lot of people do feel guilty and bad and paranoid about it
yeah.
and think that they're going to get caught or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the argument that religious sexual guilt is good because it polices immoral sexual behavior falls down on two fronts. The sexual behavior it's policing isn't actually immoral, and the policing is almost entirely ineffective. Oh, by the way, the improvement in people's sex lives when they leave religion, it isn't just about sexual guilt. It shows up in many aspects of people's sex lives, such as, to give just one example, their willingness to share sex fantasies with a partner. And most importantly, it shows up in people's assessments of their own sex lives overall. This is primarily true of people who have been heavily religious before their deconversion. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being a sex life that was much worse after leaving religion, 10 being a sex life that was much improved, people who'd had the most religious lives averaged at the very high number of 7.81, and 61.6% gave the answer of 8, 9, or 10, greatly improved. People with little or no religion in their life before they became atheists mostly report that their sex lives didn't change very much.
The more religious they were, the bigger the change was for them when they de-religionized.
Exactly. But, you know, maybe that just says that they were starting off at a really bad point.
Could be.
You know what I mean? Yep. And everyone's getting to a similar level of happiness, but...
I'd like to rant on the grammar again.
Sure.
Or maybe not grammar, the style.
Okay.
So this paragraph began with, oh, by the way, this improvement in people's sex life when they leave religion, Those aren't sentences.
It sounds like a Valley Girl who's talking.
It's like this is a transcription of someone who's making it up as they go and they're speaking.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that style,
but it's
the internet.
Yeah.
In fact, for a handful of atheists who reported that their sex lives worsened when they left religion, 2.2% of participants almost all tell the exact same story. Their sex life got worse because, well, to put it bluntly, their partners or potential partners were still religious, and now that they were atheists, they weren't getting any. That's interesting, and I've heard that experience from lots of people before. So the people who said that their sex lives got worse when they dropped religion...
Was because their sexual partner didn't.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. And then they were disconnected. So then it says, as one respondent commented, my wife said to me, how can I sleep with someone who doesn't share my faith? And another, somewhat more waggishly, when I was a Christian, I could lay any girl in church. And now that I'm an atheist, they won't even talk to me. Wow. You have anything to say about that, Mike? Crazy. You know, I used to know people who would basically pick up women at church, and that was like how they got laid. Pretty creepy. And perhaps one of the most powerful messages in this report, if one of the least surprising, is the decidedly negative effect of religion on sexual education and information. People raised in more strongly religious homes rank the quality of their sex education as significantly worse than people who raised in less religious homes. 2.4 on a 5-point scale as opposed to 3.2 from the less religious folks.
Hang on. Comment. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what kind of questions they could possibly ask for people to self-report about their sexual education that they would say it's bad.
Maybe they could ask them questions that have a clear answer based on reality, like how is HIV transmitted or whatever. And if they don't know the answer.
Or have you told your children how HIV is transmitted or something?
Yeah, or something. Or did your parents tell you this about sex?
Because I was thinking they would say... You know, how are you at teaching your kids about sex? And people who are extremely religious would, you know, rightfully say, oh, I teach them great. It's great education. I teach them that the Bible says don't do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you're right. It's probably, hopefully, information-based.
Yeah, hopefully.
Okay, go on.
And the more religious kids were less likely to get sex information from their parents than the less religious ones, 13.5% as opposed to 38.2%, and more likely to get it from personal sexual experience and pornography. So as we said, Mike, mm-hmm. the generally believed notion that people who don't get quality sex education just learn it from porn is basically borne out by the study.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So in case the irony of this is escaping anyone, I'm going to hammer it in. The highly religious family values crowd are more likely to get their sexual information from porn and fooling around, while the less religious folks are more likely to talk to their parents. And in case anyone's wondering why sex information is being included in the study on sexual happiness, accurate sex education and information has been consistently shown to be one of the cornerstones of a happy, satisfying sex life, which again, atheists are a lot more likely to have. So, the last section called Happy Endings. What should this research...
Oh,
I know, I love it. What should this research say to believers? Well, the most obvious message should be, come on in, the water's fine. In debates with atheists, many believers will argue for religion on the basis of how good it makes them feel. Great argument,
well,
very convincing.
Use, yeah.
Well, it's very difficult to argue with. This makes me feel good.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, there's many tacks that a religious person will take to say to keep their religion, but that's one of them. I guess they're not saying that's the main one, so go on.
Yeah. They'll argue that religion is emotionally useful, psychologically useful, socially useful, that religion gives people a sense of meaning, moral guidance, comfort in hard times, etc. Yep, I've heard all those too. It's an argument that drives many atheists up a tree, myself included, since it has absolutely nothing to do with whether religion is, you know, true.
Yep.
Believing in Santa Claus might make kids happy and better behaved, but you wouldn't argue that people should keep putting cookies by the fireplace on Christmas Eve well into their adult years. Well, I have a comment about that.
Yeah.
I don't think it does make kids better behave because it teaches them a short-term sense of morality is based on rewards and punishments. If you're good, you'll go to heaven. If you're bad, you'll go to hell.
Yeah.
If you do something God likes, he'll hear your prayers. And if not, he'll ignore you, punish you, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't teach kids a real sense of morality that's based on the desire to connect with other human beings and meet their needs and make connections with them and to be a good person because you want to treat other people like you want to be treated, basically.
Right.
I mean, I suppose there's the golden rule, but the golden rule is more of a... I feel like the golden rule is actually an undertone in religion. It's not really the main message that I think gets hammered home. I think the main message is more one of obedience, reward, and punishment, and something that replaces the intrinsic motivation to be a good person with an extrinsic fear of punishment or desire for reward.
I completely agree, but in the article's author's defense, the point is still valid.
Mm-hmm.
Believing in Santa Claus might make someone happy, but that doesn't mean you should, you know, lie to them about Santa Claus forever.
Right. So. Yeah. Okay, but if this report is to be believed, then this argument is conclusively shown to be bogus, even if on its own terms. At least when it comes to sex, it's probably bogus when it comes to the rest of our lives as well. Or rather, it would be bogus if our society didn't privilege religious belief and treat atheism with bigotry and contempt. Countries with higher rates of atheism actually have higher levels of happiness and social functioning than more religious countries, but I digress. Well, and there's certainly a lot of confounders that could confound that.
Well, true. Statistic. And I just want to point out that's not Stephanie talking, that's the article.
Oh, yes, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so the article goes on. Religion doesn't make people happier. Not in the sack, anyway. Religion makes people less happy. Leaving religion makes people happier. There's no reason... And she just said the same thing four times. There's no reason to hang on to beliefs you don't actually believe in and that don't actually make sense to you just because you can't imagine a happy and fulfilling life without them. We know that... Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt again.
No, that's fine.
That's also a good way to look at government. Like when people say, don't you, you've got to have government. We need roads. And who would educate the poor and all that? Well, just because you don't know how to make a road doesn't mean it won't be made if there wasn't force involved.
Exactly. Exactly. And what does this report say to atheists? This report, people, is our sales pitch. Again, I will make this very clear. The fact that atheists F better has no bearing whatsoever on whether atheism is correct. And atheists should not pretend that it does. But when believers make the argument from utility, when they argue that religion is important and necessary because it makes people happy, we don't have to tear out our hair and say, does not, we can print out this report and hand it to them with a smile, a satisfied smile.
Meh.
Yeah, it's kind of...
It wasn't such a happy
it's kind of
for me.
combating an argument from utility with another argument from utility. A different one. But anyway... I thought it was pretty good. The write-up was a little repetitive, although it was good to see the highlights of that study, and I would look forward to getting into the methodology a little bit later. Yep, so is there anything more we want to say? I think we pretty much hit this topic.
Is there anything more we want to say, like, six times and six the same way?
No. We aim not to do that in Pork Therapy, although we've certainly been guilty of that in the past.
We've been guilty that our specialty is
But at
tangents,
least we don't
though.
Feel guilty about sex, Mike, right?
Yeah, that's right. I don't feel guilty about being redundant either.
No, we are some sex positive and redundancy positive quirks. Anyway, if you want to ask us your relationship questions and save us from reading more articles like this, you can email us questions@porktherapy.com. And that's once again, porctherapy.com. Check us out in the Liberty Radio Network. And you can also call us 419-PT-LOVE-4. Leave us a voicemail with your relationship questions and we will play it on the air.
Yeah. If you think this or any of our past episodes on any topic we've done, and we've done, you know, 130 shows, would be interesting to a friend or a relative or someone you work with, you know, anyone you associate with, or might strike up some interesting conversation, Please share it with them.
Absolutely. Or post it on your Facebook, something like that. 2 second activism.
Yeah.
Take your favorite pork therapy and publicize it a little bit, because we could sure use your help and we want to get our message out to as many people as possible. So share the love and enjoy.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
They're two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy.